Here in Orlando, Florida, O-Town Compost is leading the composting revolution, recycling organic waste into a nutrient-rich resource. Join Charlie Pioli, founder of O-Town Compost, as we hear from the nation's leading voices behind the grassroots community composting movement. Welcome to the Community Composting Podcast.
Please rate and review on whichever podcast platform you're listening to. If you feel like this is good content and you're learning a lot about composting. Hey, welcome to the Community Composting Podcast. This is episode number 43 with an old friend of mine, Cole Rosengren. He's the editor of the industry online newspaper for waste called Waste Dive, one of my favorite places to get information about the industry. Cole, our friendship started when I read your article about being a catering server in Boston, and I really identified with, you know, the amount of food waste you were seeing being taken out each night. And I forget the details of your article, but I knew I had to reach out to you after reading that.
Yeah, no, I do. I'm glad you did. I remember it was nice. Always nice to meet someone who's worked in catering and food service and came away with the same feelings that we both did, which is, wow, there's a lot of waste and there's probably a better way.
Yeah, those weddings at the Boston Public Library, I just recall like black trash bags of perfectly edible food, you know, some of the best food, high quality stuff like, you know, artichokes and caviar and, you know, all kinds of like tenderloin meats.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then what was ironic is that's where the homeless people in Boston would sleep on those steps of the Boston Public Library. So it just seemed like a big problem that there was all this food waste heading out. And I remember I even tried to pitch the owners of the catering company, like, you don't have to make every event. You don't have to compost at every event, but make it an option for the guests. And, you know, even if 5% of people choose that, you know, that still makes a big difference. So,
yeah, no, it can be done. I mean, when I was working in New York catering, we would do it on a lot of jobs. And, you know, sometimes it's easier than others, but it doesn't have to have much of an added extra cost, especially if the catering company has a central kitchen, you know, there where they're also handling their food scraps.
Yeah.
You know, you just bring it back, reverse logistics, you know, and bring it back on the truck at the end of the night and pick it up the next day.
Yeah, there's always those employees who will like roll their eyes at the beginning. But I think just like what's happening in California, where they have a statewide organics mandate, you know, you're seeing just restaurants just, you know, getting on board. It takes a couple weeks, but it just gets on board. Well, anyway, let me ask about your background and how you got started and how you got into, you know, this career. I used to be a longtime listener of your like radio show in Boston or Cambridge, and it was called Techno Trash. It seems mm-hmm. like you just really gravitated towards, you know, the waste industry news.
Yes, I have. It's been a number of years now, but it's been a lot of fun. Yeah, I think the first thing that got me into it was that work in food service, as you mentioned. You know, many years in restaurants, catering in different cities. I'm originally from Maine, so I started doing that, you know, in Portland, Maine, and then college in Boston. Then I lived in New York for a long time before I moved back up here to the Boston area. And each step along the way, I was usually catering or working at a restaurant, sometimes as my primary gig, sometimes in the background while I was doing other things. But especially in New York is when I really got first exposed to the scale of it, because we'd be doing very large events. In my position, I was on what was called the sanitation crew. So we were the first in and the last out. We'd help set everything up and break everything down and deal with all the trash that mm-hmm. came along, scrape up everyone's plates, dump out all the wine glasses for events ranging from, you know, a dozen people to thousands. And just seeing the real scale of it feeling the weight of, you know, the hot greasy trash bag on your back, trying to lug it through like a cornfield in the Hamptons, someone's wedding estate, or damn many flights of stairs, a service elevator in the Empire State Building or whatever. I was like, wow, this is a lot of trash. And the rules were different everywhere. And that's what kind of, you know, threw me off. And things have evolved a little bit in New York since then, but it'd be like, okay, we're recycling in this building, but not in that building. And here we do this and there we do that. And I just got curious why. Started reading up. New York, obviously being a large city, has a very rich history with waste and sanitation and policy. That coincided at the time that I sort of had a career pivot, went back to grad school to get a journalism degree at the City University of New York, and made waste my primary focus at that time. Go to, you know, sanitation committee meetings for the New York City Council, focused on, you know, environmental justice factors when I was a local reporter in the South Bronx for a couple of years, and just tried to get a sense of where is this stuff going, who's affected by it, how does the system work, and really fell into it. It was just very, and this was, you know, around 2014, 2016 time period. So, you know, it was growing awareness around food waste at that time. You know, we saw like the EPA food waste goal. There was more talk of, it wasn't new information, of course, but there was sort of a fresh attention to it. And then to bring things full circle, you know, I was just looking for freelance work after I got out of grad school, fell in with Waste Dive and got exposed to the real business side of it. You know, with at Waste Dive, we cover all aspects of the business of waste recycling in the United States. And that was 2016. And now a little over 6 years later, have stuck with them and kind of moved up the ranks. And I'm now lead editor over there and really enjoyed it. The more I know, the more I want to know. I've gotten very sucked into the whole thing.
Yeah, you must be like an encyclopedia that I wish I had in my brain. But you publish like a few articles every week, correct? And you know, oftentimes they're like deep dives into subjects, you know, in food waste or the recycling markets are always changing. But I mean, that's awesome because I think as composters, like we need to look at the history of the industry and other companies who have been successful or not so successful and kind of learn from them. And, you know, here in Florida, it's still, I've said this on many podcasts, it feels like the Wild West because O-Town Compost and a couple others are trailblazing because previously there weren't any compost haulers or there's still not much infrastructure. But, you know, I look at a state like Massachusetts, where you're from, and I was living in Massachusetts up until 2017, right after they mandated the statewide organics ban. Can you talk about that and like how has that gone as far as diversion, meeting the diversion goals and, you know, overall, have statewide organics bans been successful?
Sure. So yeah, here in Massachusetts, the current policy is if you generate 1 ton or more per week of organics on the commercial side, you have to have a plan to divert it for recycling and also, you know, to be focused on recovery for donation and just generally reduction.
And I saw that on November 1st, that's going down to any businesses with half a ton.
Yeah.
Each week.
Yeah, which is a big deal. Yeah. So that's going to bring in a lot more folks, a whole new round of, you know, restaurants and other places that are high volume establishments, but just weren't covered before. But yeah, even with that 1 ton a week policy, I haven't looked at the statistics lately, so I can't say exactly where it is. But I know research from the state DP has shown it led to a round of investment, you know, a lot of new investment in composting infrastructure, anaerobic digestion infrastructure, new companies sprang up or companies that were existing started offering services for organics collection. And it's pretty robust around here. The one thing I think is kind of different in Mass versus other states, you mentioned California, right, where their policy is taking effect now across the board, requirement for organics recycling, residential and commercial. Which has its challenges, and I'm happy to discuss that in more detail. But here in Mass, you know, on the residential side, we haven't really seen it take off in a mandatory way yet. There's a huge number of subscription services for people who want to subscribe, get a bucket service. There's many great choices in the area. But outside Cambridge, you know, which is one of the larger cities here, does have residential pickup. Boston has started rolling out a program, but the policy in Mass has not led to widespread residential composting or recycling of organics yet, which is interesting. Whereas other states, and no one's quite cracked the code, but that could be coming.
Sure, no one's cracked the code how to get residential food waste diversion. It's the organics mandates are always in the commercial sector, it seems. Right.
And for good reason, right? That's where a lot of the quantity is. You know, it's easier to affect change. You know, if you can get the folks working in a commercial kitchen to adapt, as we discussed, you can start diverting a lot of material. So it makes sense to focus there. I think that's what's going to be coming. And there's a number of other states that do have statewide policies. As you say, they're mainly focused on commercial generators usually, or sometimes there'll even be a distance factor. So, okay, if you're a commercial generator of X amount, and if you're within X miles of a place to send it, then you have to comply, which some people feel is not robust enough because that a lot of loopholes there. But a number of Northeast states and other parts of the country do have policies. Washington State passed one this year, which is going to be similar to California. So it's going to be much more robust. So it's more and more happening, I think, in the same way that we saw yard waste bans decades ago.
Right. Is there enforcement involved in these policies?
That's the big factor. Yeah. I mean, here in Massachusetts and anywhere, that's always the question of, okay, you have the policy, but how are you enforcing it? Mm-hmm. Hit or miss, I would say. You know, that's always sort of a discussion between the state DP here and environmental groups that they wish, you know, there was more enforcement. A lot of this is sort of kind of honor system, for lack of a better word. No one's coming around checking your bin every single day. But mm-hmm. usually what the inspector, at least here in Massachusetts, they'll maybe go to the transfer station and say, hey, it looks like that whole truck you just tipped was full of organics. Mm-hmm. Why is that going to the incinerator? We're going to maybe give you a ticket, or, you know, that's sort of how it works. There's not necessarily a robust system.
So they would ding the hauler potentially?
In some cases, yeah. There's various levels of liability. Usually there'll be sort of a warning or, you know, efforts to work with involved. And it's hard because the haulers, in their view, and people may disagree, they can only get the customer to do so much, short of fining the customer for contamination or for not following the policy, which they sometimes have to do. But at the end of the day, the haulers are the one picking it up. So they're also the ones who are going to help to make this happen.
Yeah. And I believe is that, you know, the mandates are going to be coming eventually to all states or the majority of states. And what I believe is that these businesses like who are dragging their feet, it's just going to be like not fun for them to get over. It's just a lot easier to be a early adapter. And if there is no enforcement, you know, that I guess technically you could skate by the rules, but, you know, if as haulers, what we try to do is build up the community around composting and give like our clients, the early adopters, shout outs for doing such a good job. You know, we would never like call out a business for not composting because Lord knows I've heard plenty of no's and submitted proposals only to get it shot down because they don't understand what's the purpose of composting. But, you know, I just think that in the long run, a commercial business needs to look at composting just like trash and recycling as a utility. And, you know, they should take full credit for being an early adopter. So California's State Bill 1383, I believe that's what it's called. How is that different from other mandates? And how would you, I just read your article you recently published about how it's kind of going. And if you could just talk about like, how is that going so far in a mammoth state like California where the population is giant and presumably the food waste is a lot too.
Yeah, no, it is. It's complicated, right? Given being the largest state, you know, there's going to be a lot of challenges there. But yeah, SB 1383, this was a law signed into law in 2016 by then Governor Jerry Brown, and the target is to reduce organic waste disposal 75% by 2025, which is a very tall order. And there's also a there's a kind of other companion targets along with that that are all meant to be complementary. There's another target to hit a certain level of edible food recovery by that date. There's also procurement requirements. So the term in California's jurisdiction usually means either a city or a county or a local, you know, local government, for lack of a better term. Jurisdictions are going to have to procure certain amounts of organic material, primarily compost, could also be biogas. And also mandate collection for everyone, residential. There was already a law on the books that was hadn't fully been adopted, frankly, but was starting to push for commercial organics recycling already in California. But this will sort of push that over the edge and really push things on the residential side, because while California is well known, you know, Bay Area, certain parts have been doing organics recycling and food waste collection for years, if not decades. But a lot of the state had not. Southern California, especially where a lot of the population is, LA, San Diego, landfills are still very, very cheap down there, cheaper than the national average. And so it wasn't, and they doesn't mean they didn't want to. You know, they were doing environmental programs, but it just hadn't made sense for them mathematically in their view yet to do this. But now they're going to have to. So think about, you know, City of LA rolling out organics collection for all their residents, which they're doing this year. It's a huge undertaking.
Yeah, I have to admit they're very thorough. Like, it's not just like a statewide mandate, like no enforcement, just kind of hoping it'll work out. They're really looking at it from all angles. But yeah, I imagine, like, you know, it's crazy amount of effort and even the component that isn't Department of Transportation kind of part of the bill is requiring the Department of Transportation to be buying compost in for their roadways, or am I off on
I'd
that?
have to triple check that. I wouldn't be surprised. It's one of those everyone I talk to, people who are far more versed in this than I am, they're always they think they know 1383, and then there's another wrinkle to it. Because it what's further complicated in California, other states do this too, but in California, usually you pass a bill, and then the bill has a lot in it, but then the real meat of it is in the regulatory process. So then there's a multi-year process to actually write the regs for how this all works, and those are the true rules of the road. And those regs are quite long, quite complicated. Myself and others who have read them a number of times still don't always feel like we know what's happening, like we know everything that's in there. So yeah, there's a ton in there, and very de as you say, it's very detailed. Some feel too detailed. You know, what are we down to? The color of your bins. There's a whole new color scheme for bins in California, which is not all that different than what's out there. But trash now has to be, it's the gray cart. It's not black. It's not anything. It has to be gray. Blue for recycling. Green for food and yard waste. A lot of rules on how
I
to
mean,
sort
that
it and count it.
standardization is important, though, I feel.
Totally. Yeah, and I think that makes sense. But yeah, so it was complicated to begin with. There's questions about processing infrastructure. You know, there's quite a bit in the state, but a lot more is needed potentially to meet the demands of what's coming. It's not quick, as I'm sure your listeners know, to get a compost site permitted and up off the ground, especially in California, where their air districts are very strict. And then COVID, obviously, as with anything, really was a challenge, really threw things off. Some jurisdictions were ready to go, about to start implementing this. COVID hit, had to pause it, threw off the budget. The state agency, CalRecycle, opted to wait on enforcement a little while so they didn't start penalizing people immediately because they hadn't rolled the programs out. And so now, you know, we're a few years out from this 2025 target. And I think everyone knows it's probably, you're not going to hit the full number. That's usually how it goes with these targets. They're aspirational. But there's a lot of catching up to do. But that said, it's a huge shift. You know, all the largest haulers in the country are all in that market, at least the top three of them. They're doing it. They've been doing it already. But, you know, everyone's doing it, investing in compost infrastructure, digesters, carts, trucks. There's a huge multi-million, if not billion-dollar rollout happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made in this, I think, is what the haulers are beginning to realize, which to me, like, That's a great argument for why we should be composting everywhere. You look at a state like Florida or, Nebraska, where there's not a whole lot of compost infrastructure like that. If I was a hauler with like a lot of investment, I would just be like, wow, this is where we need to just start things up, and we can really grow from here.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. I've asked them many times over the years, the largest, companies in the industry that we cover, where are you in organic recycling? What's the business opportunity here? Even though, like I said, some of them, they do it in California, they do it in other markets. Still, it's not at the level of scale, though. They're not doing enough that they're reporting it, as a separate line item in their quarterly earnings reports. They're not talking about it on earnings calls. It's not at a scale as it is for blue car recycling. And even that is not all that big a part of their business at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And they do it in their line, and that's, it's capitalism. It's sort of free market. Let's say, look, if the customers want it, we can offer it, and they can. But then the question becomes, as I'm sure, as you say, you've encountered, some customers are not always going to want this. It can be viewed as an added cost, and it's what, but how, who's, on what terms are we talking about financially? If it's cheaper to go to the landfill, maybe they don't want to do this. But at the end of the day, who's setting the prices at the landfill? And it's all this, it's all tied together. But at the same time, they can do it and they will do it.
You
I
mean
asked
it's
them.
all tied together because usually it's the state or local governments who are, I feel like regulation can come in and get people to do it. And you're right, a lot of landfills are owned by haulers, but here in Orange County, it's a municipal-owned landfill. So I don't know if Orange County really wanted to shift over to composting, sure, and extend the life of their landfill. They could easily raise tipping fees and start a composting site and make sure the tipping fee for food waste is like a little bit lower, and then implement an organics ban. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a government, so in democracy, the majority needs to be on board with that. So,
Right. And without getting too far down the rabbit hole, part of it, the challenge with government policy here in the United States, waste policy, at least along the lines of organics, is not regulated federally. It's very much a state by state issue, or sometimes even within the state, a county or a city issue. And so without kind of a blanket policy, as we see in some other countries, and there are arguments for and against that. I'm not necessarily, it's not my job to advocate for policy, but I, at the minimum, can point out we do not have one. There's federal regulations on landfills, standards and air emission standards. There's that is in place. But other than that, there's, non-binding recycling targets nationally. There are these goals, there's these things, but nothing saying you have to do this.
yeah.
And so it becomes free market, it becomes state by state. But what's interesting is for a long time, even within the last few years, you'd say, well, unless the state policy pushed it, we weren't going to see people do it. And again, you mentioned, say, Nebraska, for example, they don't have a state policy. Maybe people aren't going to do this. What I found interesting is the sustainability push, the ESG push for large corporations is getting people more interested in this. And we're seeing people willing to invest, as obviously you're seeing in Orlando, even when they're not required to. They'll say, especially if they're large generators, you're X retail company or grocery chain, and you have a lot of food waste, and it's on your emissions footprint, you're going to want to find a way to deal with this.
Yeah.
Makes you look better with investors, maybe saves you some money. And that's pushing investment for digesters and other infrastructure. I talk to people financing these projects or pushing these projects, and they say state policy is not the number one factor for them anymore. If they can get customers, they can get volume, they'll go anywhere, and people will sign up and do it, which has been very interesting to see.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I've noticed here in Orlando is, just businesses are doing it for a multitude of reasons. So yeah, let's talk about techno trash. I don't think you're still doing it anymore, but it was a
No.
cool like radio show where you played techno, but then would take a break and talk about maybe the top topics in the industry. And I wanted to ask, like, what is currently exciting you about the industry? And if you were to do a recent episode, what would you mention on this modern episode?
Yeah, no, it's a fun question. Yeah, unfortunately, the show is on a very extended hiatus. We'll see. Perhaps it comes back. There's a combo of, just like life was getting busy, young kid, all that. But yeah, Techno Trash, I did that for it was Boston Free Radio. It's an internet radio station here in the area. I was just going to go and play music. But they said, oh, you should talk about your news stuff too. So I'd sort of sprinkle it in. Yeah, if I was to think about what were the top stories from, say, the week or the month, not all that maybe exciting to your listeners, but mergers and acquisitions are a huge factor in the solid waste industry now, affecting some organics companies too, of course, as we see and report on. So I'm sure I'd have some of those to call out.
Well, yeah, just to talk about that, I mean, that's like the storyline of the industry ever since, the EPA was formed pretty much in 1970. So, if is this, do you feel like kind of like the consolidation is creating monopolies and that's not good for, the industry? And how do you look at like community composting as maybe like a local decentralized initiative?
Yeah, no, the industry certainly is more consolidated than it has been over the years. You can just look at that by looking at who, ownership of key infrastructure, landfills, transfer stations, things like that. That said, there is always something of a cycle. There are new businesses coming along. I think I've not seen the data and I haven't been able to pin it down, probably less than before. There used to be a cycle of maybe someone would sell a company, let their non-compete expire, come back, make a new one in a few years. That's happening a little bit less. We're seeing more what feels like kind of full exits of multi-generational family-owned businesses selling off for a variety of reasons. It's hard. It's a hard operating environment right now. So they're selling off. I don't, from a pure, regulatory sense of what's defined as a monopoly, that's something that the DOJ and the FTC define and regulate. And so in their view, they're not going to let it get to that point. They don't feel, especially under this current administration, the folks are pretty strict in that area. We're seeing it being harder to get big deals through DOJ, whereas under the prior administration, there's a little more of that happening. And so from, but that's on paper, right? They'll say it's not a monopoly on paper. And again, this is not up to me to have an opinion, but other people say, yeah, they see it in their market where you don't necessarily have choices. Or so-and-so family company who everyone knew and liked for a number of years gets bought, and all of a sudden the service goes downhill when someone bigger buys them. So as far as the role, of community composters, I think definitely a clear role, especially as if organics recycling takes off in the way that we're talking about. I mean, I think it already has clearly, but if it really gets scaled up to the level of like everyone, and we have to remember too, not everyone even has blue cart recycling. That still doesn't exist in some parts of the country. But if organics, if green bin really gets to the level, where it's as ubiquitous as that, I think there is a real opportunity for these community composters. And it's not to say it's easy, because it's still just as expensive to hire labor and to operate trucks and do all that stuff. But it's somewhat more feasible to have a little more control over your processing infrastructure at the end of the day, right? You can possibly afford to finance and permit and get your own compost site scaled up or work with others to utilize theirs. Whereas, say if you're trying to get into recycling, we don't see all that many community scale recyclers. There's a few nonprofit operators out there that have done well for themselves. But there's not that many companies who just do recycling anymore because it's really expensive and tough to be in that market and to ride the waves of the commodity markets and all that stuff. And same for a landfill. You're not going to be just some person off the street saying, I'm going to buy a truck and make a landfill. That's very hard to do, but it's a little bit easier for composting. So I think there is a role, and it is interesting to see people offer that alternative. And I think people like the local connection to say, hey, I hired my community composter and I get compost back. You get your compost share, you can go see it. Maybe, or they have a good story to tell about how they're doing things in the community. Not to say other haulers may not, but I think it's a little more possible. What maybe, and I don't know what you or your listeners are dealing with on this. At the same time, it's getting complicated. PFAS and all these other factors make it tough to run any operation. And if you don't have a lot of capital, that can be challenging.
For sure. I mean, the site, a compost site, is very expensive. But, you know, I think one day, I really hope one day that the green cart program does become as universal as like the blue recycling program has become in most municipalities in the country. What percentage of the country would you say has recycling, single or dual stream?
Yeah, it's been a minute since I've looked. I think the rough, and this probably is an outdated figure, but the estimate is at least 60% of the country has access. The question of what is access, and I think it's been a while since I've looked, but you know, there's a lot of gaps on blue cart. If you live in a multifamily apartment building, you're usually not getting enough service. In a rural area, you got to go drive to drop it off. There's a lot of barriers, but it's the majority. You know, it is widely out there for sure. Blue card.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that the rural areas, you know, you can just chuck your food scraps in the backyard. But I think I would love to see the green bin program get to like 60% of the country in one day. And I wonder for community composters, you know, when they start getting that notice from the larger waste haulers, like if there will, there'll probably be a decision they'll have to make about, you know, selling their company. And then, you know, just kind of going down that same rabbit hole. But I wonder, like, it's still too early to tell what the composting industry is going to look like.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's only just now that we've started to see, you know, some larger deals. Atlas Organics, for example, their new investment and ownership by Generate. Yeah, which is interesting to see they're scaling up. But other than that, you know, and like I said, the large haulers also do it. But in terms of standalone compost companies operating outside of a given region, there's not that many yet. But it's coming. I don't know. If I had to guess, I don't know if we'd see more standalone composting companies or just more of the haulers scaling up their organics recycling business. That's the thing. If, you know, name any, whatever, X large haulers in your market who is a national or multi-state company, it doesn't take them much to do this. They have the money. They have the resources. They could launch a bunch of organics trucks tomorrow if they decided it was the right time to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And that's why I think for our audience, like if you're an aspiring community composter, you are a community composter, that's why you just gotta try to go to the moon. Like you gotta get as much as you can and grow as much as you can, not because you really have a choice, but there's so much organic waste out there. And if you just stay small and don't take it that seriously, you know, maybe you don't put all your effort in, you know, one day, like, you could just get wiped off by, like, someone with a lot more capital than you who sees the opportunity. It's a little harder for them to move you out of the way if you already have, like, an extensive client list and you also, you know, are diverting a significant amount. Like, you've already built this community.
As you start to take on more food scraps, you realize very quickly that you need a better composting system to process the material. This is why I highly recommend the aerated static pile micro bin designed and made easy by O2 Compost. In 60 days, I have finished compost without putting in the labor of turning the pile. The piles heat up to over 140 degrees, killing pathogens, weed seeds, and fly larvae, making the end product safe to use in the garden. With 32 plus years of experience in the compost industry, Peter Moon, owner of O2 Compost, is a leading expert in the field of ASP composting. I encourage you to set up a free half an hour consultation with Peter Moon by going to his website, www.o2compost.com. That's the letter O, the number 2, compost.com. If you mention that you heard about O2 Compost on this podcast, you'll receive a 10% discount on the purchase of the Microbin Compost Training Program.
Anyway, a lot of us community composters, like especially the people with ILS, are we want to tear down the status quo of the waste industry. How do how would you say we would you recommend we do that? And like, what is, something you've approach that you've seen may work?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, I'll say, it's one of those. It's not my role to have like an opinion on anything along those lines. But in terms of watch, reporting on people who have set out to do that or have tried to do that, it's interesting. I think it's really think about just competition, right? If someone, say you want to gain market share or as you say, preserve your role in the sector, the easy option is of course to try to compete on price, right? Say, okay, we're going to offer a lower price, and that is a critique sometimes against some of these larger companies. Say, okay, XYZ company charges a lot and they're a national company and we're a local company, we can charge less. That's a slippery slope though, of course, as I'm sure you and listeners know, you want to A, value services for a certain amount, not run yourself into the ground offering stuff at a loss. So that's one to be careful of. And we've seen companies kind of rise and fall and not always succeed with that. I think another thing we've seen is certain companies will come out, guns a-blazing, and not to say, look, it's a free country. You can say whatever you want. You can criticize and point out anything you want with the model. But it sometimes people can feel there's a sense of hypocrisy, maybe too strong of a word. But if you're saying, oh, so and so is corrupt and evil, and they're, this thing isn't working. But at the end of the day, if I have some residuals from my compost process, I'm going to send it to their landfill because, like, where else is it going to go? So sort of recognize like you are part of this system, you are part of this network too. To have some level of sort of trying to keep it cordial with people, I've seen that can go a long way. Because if, but it's, at the same time, doesn't mean people can't go out and point out things that are true about, hey, this they do this or they do that or the system is this way because of this reason. But doing that in the same way that you can still, have a pleasant conversation with someone if you run into them in the hallway at the annual networking thing or whatever, those people seem to have stuck around longer, the people who know how to do that. And so, I
Yeah,
mean, that
you're right. That's what I've noticed too, is like you don't get very far if you're like, resentful, or you want to just like be kind of militant against, the status quo. If you make a you gain a lot more ground by being cordial. And just, demonstrating, like walking the walk. So yeah, I don't think it has to be like has to go up in flames. It's just gonna be like a slow process that, we have to be really patient about changing the status quo. But there's new technology and new stuff happening all the time in the compost industry. Is there anything you think, any technology you've seen that's really shaken it up?
Not a full shakeup. I think, again, this isn't, I'm sure, new to your listeners, but it's been interesting to see, the evolution of pre-processing technology to start to see robotics and some opticals and things used. Not everyone's going to be able to afford this. This isn't going to make sense for every facility, but the purity demands for composters are only on the rise, obviously, as PFAS and all these other factors. And so it's interesting to see how people are getting sophisticated with that to really make sure they can control the stream, what's coming in. I think I haven't heard it used as much for organics recyclers. I'm sure some are. But some of these camera technologies, bin sensor technologies, that stuff has gotten a lot more accessible in the last few years. So I think that's interesting. The one I'm watching, and I have not seen kind of the next big thing on this, maybe some listeners are aware, but composters being increasingly expected to deal with stormwater management in some areas being permitted or having to basically be permitted as if they have leachate to manage, which is typically a landfill issue. But of course, there's water that comes out of the compost process. And with these PFAS issues, it's a real challenge and a real, I think some people are pretty scared, understandably, about how to manage this at their site. They think they had a great site that ran for years or decades. And all of a sudden they say, wait, I need to do what? I need to be able to handle it this way. I think that's going to be a challenge for folks, not insurmountable. And it's not unique to composters. Everyone's dealing with the PFAS issue. But I think that whoever can really help people figure that out is going to be quite popular in the next few years.
And there's been, like, I think in the New England region, there's been a lot of like food waste depackaging plants for like the industrial sector. There's a lot of food waste, you know, coming from these industrial plants that package and sell, you know, food or pet food. How has that been working out? And hasn't there been some controversy about that?
It certainly has. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. They're scaling up a lot. We're seeing a lot of that. And that is not uncommon, as you say, especially grocery streams, you know, food distributors, kind of large quantities of things. The upside is, yeah, you know, people say, hey, we can make it easier and get all this stuff out and use, and maybe send it to the anaerobic digestion and get it nice, you know, kind of clean slurry for that. At the same time, there's microplastic concerns. You know, we've covered this and others. Microplastics are another one. They're, you know, unsafe at any real level, just like PFAS, but can be quite small, hard to measure. There's not, to my knowledge, full agreement on a standard of what's safe. Every state's doing a little bit differently. And there is the concern that in this process, you are, you know, as you're whatever, crunching up that thing, arugula or whatever, some of the microplastics from the plastic packaging are getting in there. The flip side, and we, one of our contributors looked into this quite a bit this spring. We said, okay, what is the alternative? Is to do it by hand. Basically, you're going to have someone opening every single pack of expired whatever from the grocery store. Not a great job. And it's hard. And again, this is not my role to say what's better, what's worse, but there's really no great answer here. And I've been to operations digesters where they got guys out in the parking lot in the hot sun, opening the packages, trying to do this. I've done it catering. You know, it's slow. It takes a long time. You're lucky if you can even get the labor to show up to do it. It's not going to be high paid. And so it's either, okay, are we not going to do it at all? Or are we going to do it this way? But it's a challenging choice. You know, and yeah, I know some people think depackagers really enable lower quality material, send stuff to digesters, which some people in the composting community I know don't like at all in the first place, especially if they're co-digesting with wastewater. And so I think that's where it becomes complicated. This idea of basically at scale, you know, for all the reasons we've talked about, there's a lot of great stories to tell in composting community scale, small business, local operations. Once things start getting larger in scale, you're aggregating volumes, you're using larger capacity sites. I think some people in the community don't like that for various reasons, you know?
Yeah. I, you know, for one, I wish there was a way to make a durable packaging that was organic. And I think, you know, maybe the technology could be developed there one day. The other thing is, I think at these depackaging plants, it's like, you know, hundreds of tiny little hammers, like smashing the packaging, like if it's a steel can or, you know, some kind of plastic, it's kind of like brute force, but it's all automated still. So of course there's going to be, like, you know, part of the packaging inert material ending up in the organic material, and it leads to a lot of contamination. And then the question, like, what do you do with that feedstock? So they can't send it to an anaerobic digester where, you know, what's left is the digestate, and it will be, you know, they'll get biogas from it, but what's left will be contaminated. And I guess they would have to landfill it.
It depends on, you know, what the standards are in the area, who your buyer is for that end product. Yeah, traditionally we'd see digestate used for land application, you know, as a fertilizer, because but that's becoming a little more challenged now. It still happens, but, you know, the
contamination, right?
Yeah, because of the contaminated, both the microplastics and the PFAS. So yeah, no, it's a real challenge. But at the same time, people will say, and, you know, that I think that both sides have points here. Digesters are make more sense. Some people feel in certain areas, they sometimes have a smaller footprint if run properly, easier to manage odors and other factors. Not to say odors can't be managed well at a compost site. They certainly can, but especially if you're doing windrows or whatever, it's a little more complicated, you know? And so, and at the same time too, the market for biogas and RNG is through the roof right now. There's so much interest and excitement in that area, to the point that it's not a bubble. I think a lot of this is real, but it's fascinating to see in this last year or two how much money has flowed into that, all these projects.
Is it because diesel prices are so high potentially?
That's definitely a factor. The ESG investment wave is another factor. You know, companies, this is considered a beneficial thing in that realm, both to reduce your emissions, your scope one, or for say your XYZ retailer or food distribution company, if you can say, I'm heating my facility with RNG instead of heat from, say, natural gas or a coal-fired power plant, that looks better for you on your sustainability report. You can report lower scope three emissions. There's state credit policies, the EPA renewable fuel standard policy is evolving. So yeah, there's just a lot of money to be made there. And that applies to landfill gas projects too. We're seeing a huge boom in those right now as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am super excited that I'm going to Waste Expo this year in May of 2023 in New Orleans. Will you be there? Probably.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, perfect. I'll get a chance to talk with you in person.
Yeah.
But, you know, I used to go to these Waste conferences back when I was a consultant for MSW. But now I haven't been to one for a long time. What do you recommend for me to do? And I mean, wouldn't you recommend other community composters to go kind of be a sponge and soak up as much industry information as they can? Because honestly, this is what leads to a successful composting business. You network, you get, you know, you meet a lot of other people who have been down the road. The way I ended up in the waste industry was actually going to a conference as an independent. I didn't have a job. I was looking for a job. And I went to like the Waste 360 conference in Austin, Texas, was networking at the reception and met a lady who had a friend who was hiring in Orlando. And that's how I went from Boston to Orlando. So, yeah.
I didn't realize that's how that happened. Yeah, no, conferences are great for that purpose. Certainly, they can be expensive. They can be tiring, you know, so you got to pick the right one. But Expo, especially if you haven't been before, and if you're, you know, growing in scale and kind of want to know more about the business, the industry, I would consider worthwhile for sure. It's the largest of the year. I should add a disclaimer. I'm actually now employed by the company who puts it on, but I promise I am saying this not to promote, but just because. But yeah, no, you learn a lot just to see, even if it's things that maybe you don't agree with in your business model, or things you're not trying to do. But I've talked to community composters, organic recyclers who go to Expo, and they say it's quite eye-opening to see what's happening. You know,
I think Bootstrap was there last year. And, you know, probably a smorgasbord of others, but it just makes a lot of sense. And yeah, it may not be like your first year as a community composter in business, but, you know, as you grow and your business grows, you know, it's a great place to be. And, you know, kind of you get a look the enemy in the eye, if you know, is one way, but you also just get to like understand what you know the other waste haulers are about, and realize that, you know, they're all just good people mostly. So
yeah, no, and if in just a good way to stay competitive, you know, you go on the show floor, see all the newest gadgets and toys, the trucks, the technology, whatever stuff that larger competitors may well have in your market, and could be telling customers, hey, hire this because we have cameras, we have routing software, we have all these things. you should be able, you know, go, you can buy that just like anybody else if it makes sense in your budget. But at a minimum, it's a good way to go learn about those things.
Yeah, the trade show floor is going to be like really cool, looking at all the new technology and trucks and hydraulic lifts and you name it. Because, I mean, yeah, we're always looking for efficiency improvements. I'll ask you one more question, because I know that you subscribe to a community composting service. Is it Bootstrapped there? Or
it is Bootstrapped, yeah.
Okay. Cool. And you're located in Somerville. And, you know, what is it like in your neighborhood? Are there a lot of other people who are subscribing with their bucket? And do you guys ever like talk about it in your neighborhood?
Yeah. I'd say I've been living in Somerville a little over 6 years now. And I can't remember exactly how many options we had at the time. But now we have three, if not more, options in terms of companies we could hire. And they'll take turns at the farmers market, especially the newer ones, trying to pitch themselves and get people to sign up. It's become a much more visible factor here in the area. Depends on where you walk, but at least one neighbor across the street has a bucket for that another company picks up, you know. And that, I've talked with people over the years, oh, why do you use so-and-so? Well, they're cheaper, or they do this or they do that. And we like boots.
That's like a real free market right there. I mean,
yeah, no, it's cool to have at least three choices. And for us, we like Bootstrap. Having known people who've worked there over the years, how they take care of their employees, the benefits, all that. And, you know, we like that. And that's why we stick with them, even if others may come along with different pricing. I think what will be interesting to watch here, as it has grown up so much, there's a big political demand in the city to see some kind of program rolled out, because our neighbors in Cambridge, just over the border, have residential service. Granted, it's going to be co-digested to the wastewater treatment plant, which a lot of people do not like. So that's controversial. But there's a push in the city of Somerville. We're not that big of a city. We're only 80,000 people. But people are asking our mayor and others, hey, what can we do this? Why isn't this happening? Hasn't happened yet, but they're talking about it. And even in the last few years, it's changed, because even a few years ago, the city did like an emissions inventory, looked at climate programs and said, well, waste is only, I think they said 3% of our citywide emissions come from waste. So this is just a low priority for us. We're not going to focus on this, but depends on how you calculate that.
Yeah.
There's a lot more there. And two, the alternative is our city contract is to send the trash to the incinerator locally. One of the oldest in the country. Not the operators say they meet the permit requirements, and I'll take their word for it, but still there's a pretty clear choice of, okay, we could be composting or sending it to a digester or whatever, or sending it to the incinerator. And I think more people are making that choice for their own, even though the city isn't making it.
Yeah. City of Boston is announced that they're rolling out a curbside composting pilot. Is that like really hurting the community composters in Boston? You know, this is probably a better question for like Bootstrap, but.
You know, without getting into names, I have talked to some off and on about that. And I know the short answer is maybe not, you know, because people feel, it's only a pilot. I think it's oversubscribed. There's more demand than they could meet the city. So there's still plenty of people in the city who don't have access to it. The question is, you know, a sustainable business model, you know, to go after that. And are you going to make money doing that? Granted, the folks who are doing it, I trust that it made sense for them to do it, the two haulers that are working together on this, but right. Not everyone.
They put it out to bid and, yeah. You know, they selected, I believe it was Black Earth.
So it's Save That Stuff and Garbage to Garden, our team.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Garbage to Garden. They're like the main base community composter.
They are. Yeah. They've got a growing presence down here. So I'll say basically, yeah, if locally, and I apologize if I'm missing someone, but your options are Bootstrap, Garbage to Garden, and Black Earth, basically, in our region. I think they still see plenty of room. You know, it doesn't affect the commercial side, where there's some great organizations like Cerro, for example, you know, that work there. I think the most common model we've seen that my city hasn't done and Boston isn't doing is it's not a full, you know, rollout of a program, but to say, hey, we'll sort of endorse a particular hauler and give you a slight discount on their service. To say, okay, if you go with XYZ hauler, we as the city of whoever will contribute whatever, let's just, I'm making up numbers, three of the $12 a month that costs you or whatever, you know, to try to get you in the door. And that's, wow, I think, a good interim step. Cities can support this financially. It's cheaper than taking the whole program on themselves.
Without a doubt. I mean, I love that idea. I've actually talked with Orange County's sustainability director here in Florida about that, you know, just like, you know, they would basically give like a stipend for people to subscribe. And yeah, what here in our region, a lot of municipalities, how they promote composting is they like give people free backyard composting bins. And each one of those Black Earth or those Earth Machine bins costs, you know, like $200. So like, and you know, they more often than not just end up on the curb for trash pickup. So I think that would make a lot more sense because, you know, they can support a local business, but they can also not have to worry about taking on all the costs and headache of, you know, starting a whole another composting program or even putting out, you know, like putting out this RFP to get a contractor involved. So.
Yeah, no, I think we'll see more of that. Yeah, that's a good interim step. And drop-offs, farmers markets, that's all good stuff. You know, it's yeah, not hitting it fully. But this is a good in-between, some people feel. And maybe you're not going quite as far as a pay-as-you-throw program or something like that, which, again, is perhaps what it takes to really get people engaged. And that politically is also challenging, and I don't foresee that happening. But I know, you know, I have a home now, and we put out our 96-gallon Black Cart and Blue Cart every week. And there's so little in the Black Cart. I'm not saying I'm a zero waste saint or anything. We just don't have a lot of stuff. Yeah. But the workers are like bending down over to get the bags out. And I'm like, can I get a smaller cart? Or I've heard there's cart inserts you can get. I know someone in Washington State that has one. Like there's no incentive to me as a resident to produce less waste right now. There's none.
Nah, I know it would. And especially you're there in Massachusetts where pay as you throw is rampant in other smaller communities. But so, yeah, right when I was leaving Boston, Cambridge had just rolled out their curbside composting program. How is that going, by the way?
Yeah, it's
participation high.
I believe so. Yeah, I need to check in with them on the numbers. They've kept at it. They're still doing it. What's interesting is that they started rolling it out to some in the commercial sector. Now, I don't know the full details, but they're trying to assist restaurants and others who maybe, you know, could or are not covered by the waste ban, the state waste ban, don't have to do it. And maybe are choosing not to pay for service. The city's offering service to them. I'm not sure the financial structure. It's definitely at a discounted rate. But the city, I guess, feels confident enough that, you know, the residential program is not, you know, not perfect. You never get 100% adoption, but they've established that and are now turning to the commercial sector a little bit.
Yeah. Is there still like the stereotype among Cambridge residents that composting is stinky and attracts pests and stuff?
I wouldn't be surprised if there's still some of that. Yeah. But, you know, plenty of people know, if you're doing it right, it doesn't have to be right. You know, it's there's ways to manage that, but it's a real factor. You know, around here, there's a big rat issue here in the Boston area, real challenge, you know, and so you do have to manage it properly, but it doesn't mean it's insurmountable. Granted, not everyone has the space, but we freeze our scraps, you know, in little yogurt containers in the freezer. And then when those fill up, we stick them in the bucket in the back room. The bucket never smells. I don't put the bucket out the night before. I don't give the rats the opportunity. You know, you put it out the morning of, and it's never been an issue.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. When we have a customer, you know, saying they have fruit flies or, you know, something like that, I'm like, well, you can always just freeze your scraps and then, you know, the night before or the morning of, transfer them to the bucket and set out the night before set out. So, yeah, that's a great option that a lot of people don't think about.
Yeah, it's harder for restaurants and commercial spaces, right? They're generating larger quantities, maybe they don't have the space. But I know there's places in, downtown New York, Manhattan, where they will dedicate space in the walk-in for the food scraps.
That's
They
honestly the
plan
best
on it.
place to keep your compost bin in the walk-in if you can afford that small footprint, losing that small footprint for the bin, but there's going to be no risk of any pests, and the scraps kind of stay refrigerated, so there's no smell either, so.
Yeah, no, if anything, it's the opposite. It's true. It's people who are not diverting the food scraps, they're the ones I see having issues with their trash. I walk by after trash day and all the bins are flipped open. Some of the trash cans stink like crazy, and it's because I know they had food waste in there. And
Yeah.
that's who's getting their trash bins chewed up by the animals and who has to hose them out, whatever. It's the people who, are putting trash in the food, food in the trash.
I've even had like someone with a restaurant say, "Well, I don't think that would meet health code viola that would be a health code violation to have the compost bin in the walk-in." So I looked it up, I did my research, and it's BS. There's
Interesting.
no such law, at least not in Orange County. But it just doesn't make sense. That is probably the best place to keep it. So.
Yeah, no, I think the final, it's this thing, as I'm sure many listeners know, decades ago, this was the norm. In home businesses, whatever, it was not uncommon at all to be separating out your food scraps for animal feed, for the pigs to do in your backyard, whatever. That we've got, this people have done this before, let's say, for many
Yeah,
decades, centuries.
it's amazing how much the common consensus has shifted now, where composting is not it's kind of looked at like people without understanding. So we just have to get back to that, like you're saying. We have to get back to that, the kind of the old days where it was very common.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Cole. I really enjoyed the talk, and you're the guy I always go to about any story ideas I have. You're always like on the beat. You're always interested about what's going on. So I'll continue to read Waste Dive every morning. And I strongly encourage our listeners to read it too, bookmark it. And how do you like get your story ideas? That was one question I forgot to ask. Like, do Google keyword search?
Sure. Yeah. No, I appreciate the support. Yeah. I encourage folks to go to wastedive.com, check it out. Free newsletter, Monday through Friday, plus a weekend edition. Yeah. A lot of morning Google searches, alerts, signed up for SEC filings and court cases and this and that. But some of the best tips usually come from people, like people that we've met, or sometimes people we don't even know. That's fine too. But, we're happy to work with people to keep, you confidential. We recognize the sensitivities of what it's like to share information about your business or competitor or regulator. We understand that and are happy to work with you on that. But yeah, we're always happy to hear what's going on. We can't figure everything out, but we know where to look, corporate records and who to ask and how to poke around. And so yeah, please, if there's any question at all, send it our way. Certainly very interested in covering the organic space, have been for a number of years, as it grows from a business standpoint. And also, obviously, I don't even know if I've officially said the word, but the climate change angle, we all know why we're talking about this, right? Methane is very potent. It's a huge factor from landfills. Landfills are a big challenge here. They're making strides, they're doing what they can, but there's still methane coming out of landfills at the end of the day. There always will be, no matter how well they're run. And food waste is a big part of that. And so there's another path for it. And we're very interested in following that, how it goes.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of development in coming years. All right. Well, thanks so much, Cole. Take care.
It was good to talk to you, man.
If you enjoy the Community Composting Podcast and want to support future episodes, please follow the link in the episode show notes to give a small monthly recurring donation, even if it's $5 to $10 a month. We'll continue to come out with killer content to keep the grassroots movement rolling.